Welcome the magnificent Farron Peterson to the Amplify Horse Racing Podcast. I feel like these last couple episodes have been sort of a like an illustrious welcoming of all my friends who I've been so happy to be able to have on and share their stories. And so we've been excited, Farron, to have you on to join us.
Thank you. I'm watching some of those other stories of people I know well and just see how we're all young in our careers and how we just keep building.
Yeah, it's amazing how, like minds come together in a lot of ways. And if I had to find commonalities in, you know, our last few guests, there's been a lot of passion reflected for giving back to the industry and love of the horse and, you know, bringing new people to the industry, which you've done through in many different avenues, but one of which is volunteering for Amplify in different capacities. So I've been really thankful for that and excited to have you share your journey from coming from a very interesting background and now two different career paths into the industry. So let's start at the beginning and how you became interested in the world of thoroughbred racing.
Well, my mom taught me to ride horses since I was a baby. She's just an animal lover, a horse lover. But the love for thoroughbred racing, I believe, came from the books I read as a kid. Mm-hmm. And I would watch the Triple Crown races, but that was literally all I knew of thoroughbred racing. So since I was probably 8, I kept telling my parents, I want to be a jockey when I grow up. Which is funny because often people say, who are now vets, when I was 8, I always said I wanted to be a vet. So I just kept hammering down this idea that I was going to be a jockey. And my dad's a 6th grade teacher. My mom is a stay-at-home mom. And they're very supportive. And I have 2 older sisters. And to all of us, they just inspired us to do what we love and follow our dreams, but to make sure it's something that's actually achievable, something you can actually make a living at, and that you can shadow professionals in that field and just really find out what you're getting into before you start putting so much time into it. But I didn't live near a racetrack. I grew up in Sacramento, California, and didn't know that Golden Gate existed a few hours away. I really only knew about getting to Kentucky. So when I was in high school, my parents were saying you should really consider some other options because you're probably not going to become a jockey at this point. And I thought, well, I could go into some sort of equine like therapy. I was doing track and field and I was a pole vaulter at that time. So just rehabbing my own injuries and developing myself as an athlete made me really interested in that with horses. So I wanted to do something with equine therapy. I went to Cal Poly San Luis Obispo for my bachelor's. And then my professor there knew about KESMARC, which is Kentucky Equine Sports Medicine and Rehabilitation Center in Lexington, Kentucky. And she showed me their internship program. And I just thought, I have to get this internship. I could finally get to Lexington and make connections there, work with racehorses. And I actually was not selected, but I kept reaching out to Kirsten Johnson, the internship coordinator and who owns and runs KESMARC. And she said, well, you've been so persistent, I'll guarantee you a spot in our internship next year. And then when the internship started, one of the girls dropped out in the first week. So she reached out to me and said, would you like her spot? So I jumped on it, got on a plane to Kentucky. And that was my first experience really handling thoroughbreds. I worked the Keeneland Sale at the end of that year for Denali Stud and just learned so much about.
We just had on.
Yes, exactly. I was telling them, Conrad and Claire, I said, oh, I watched this interview. So they're still like family to me because they remember me starting from just trying to lead a colt around a ring to now actually riding these racehorses in races. So that was 11 years ago that I did that. And that was the first time just that whole summer taking every day off, which we only get 1 day off a week as an intern. And so using that to go shadow at vet clinics and shadow other professionals, like my dad always told me, just, you know, if you're going to find your avenue and your career path, make sure you find the people that you want to be like and figure out the day-to-day life. Is this actually what you want to do? Because working in the thoroughbred industry is a lot of work and it's usually a 7-day-a-week job. In early hours, and the sales, that was the first time I'd worked before sunrise. And I just remember thinking, wow, this is wild. And now if I ever wake up and the sun's up, it's like, oh my gosh, this is so weird. So my life has totally turned around, but because I'm waking up and doing something I'm passionate about, that's easy for me. And there would be nothing else I could see myself doing that would get me out of bed that early and be grateful to do it. So because I was there in Kentucky, everyone that summer was talking about Saratoga. I didn't even know about Saratoga. So then I thought, well, next summer I need to get out there. And I kept reaching out to contacts. And then one vet that I had shadowed for one day that summer at Kesmark knew a vet, Bo Landry, who was at Saratoga. So I went out, spent a week with him. And so just kept building. So every single vacation break that I had during my undergrad, and then I ultimately decided to go to UC Davis for vet school and decided I'd be a racetrack veterinarian. So I just used all that free time, really, to just pursue actual experience in the industry. And then when I was at Davis, I started working at a thoroughbred breeding farm and would deliver foals at night. And I was working in the NICU as a student technician at the clinic, because again, you're loaded down with all this book work, but I wanted to see the practical work to give me the light at the end of the tunnel, because it's 4 years. That school is very intensive. So there's no easy way around it, but at least if you can see why you're studying this hard and why you're up late at night trying to understand these mechanisms and wrap your head around these concepts. So by being at that thoroughbred farm, there was a small track there where they would start the yearlings before they'd send them off to the track. And then at the same time, while I was working in the NICU at night, one of the techs, we were working a graveyard shift, I remember, and at about 1 a.m. I was running some blood work, and she said, well, what made you want to go to vet school? I said, well, I wanted to be a jockey, but couldn't figure out how to become a jockey, so I decided I'll be a racetrack vet. She said, well, my husband's a jockey, and we have a small track in our backyard. If you'd ever want to learn how to gallop a racehorse, we'll teach you. And then she was connected with this lady, Ellen Jackson, who owns this farm in close to UC Davis, and so she connected me with her. At first, she told me she wouldn't let me get on thoroughbred. She said, you're in vet school. I don't want you to get hurt. So I just started working for her, delivering foals. And then I started working for her repro vet. So I would do that a couple days a week and just miss the morning lectures and started podcasting them, which now is apparently a normal thing post-COVID. But during my time, I graduated in 2019, started vet school in 2015. And so missing class to do practical work and then podcasting lectures at night was an option, but it was, not everyone was comfortable with what I was doing, but to me, I knew it was the right path. So long story short, got my exercise rider's license at Golden Gate Field, went down to Del Mar that summer and just galloped as many racehorses as I could, learned how to break out of a starting gate. And then the next year decided I wanted to actually be a jockey for a couple years. So I was a part-time jockey during my last 2 years of vet school. And I thought that that would just kind of check that box and I'd move on and go be a full-time vet. And I decided, no, I actually think I really have a gift for this. And my dad even said, this has always been your passion. And now you finally figured out how to get there. So when I graduated, I became a full-time jockey and then have continued my vet work. So I became acupuncture certified, which was always my interest with the whole rehabilitation, how to look at the body as a whole unit and how things connect. So that's why I like acupuncture and understanding meridians. And that was some of my pole vault injuries where I kept trying to treat the local problem and realizing it's coming from a different part of the body. And so just wrapping my brain around those concepts has always been interesting to me. Worked on the East Coast. I was riding at Monmouth Park and then in the winter at Aqueduct. So I was working on a small animal general practice and learning that side of things. So it just seems like everywhere I've gone, there's been different opportunities. And sometimes the thing that I really want to do, because it's always been equine practice, but it's hard to find part-time relief work in equine. And there's a lot more opportunity for that in small animal. So just deciding, okay, this is where I'm at right now. This is my lifestyle. I still want to pursue veterinary medicine, and it's never a lost cause. Like, I'm always growing my knowledge base. It's always concepts that I can cross over to the horses. And then being here in Lexington, now I work, sometimes I'll go around with Dr. Bob Hunt, who's a top surgeon. I'll go around with Shirley McQuellen, who's an amazing chiropractor and just has so much feel for horses. And so just being around these professionals who have such a grasp of horses and horsemanship and all the life cycles. We see these horses as foals, yearlings, race horses, and then stallions and broodmares. And it's really neat to even hear them talk about, when we're working on the stallions, the traits that they see passed down to their yearlings that they're now working on. And then when I get on those horses at the track to kind of make those connections with the similarities of what they had inherited to them. Yeah.
Wow. Farron, you're a gifted speaker on top of it all. I can tell you that much. A person doesn't have to ask a lot of questions and bringing out your story, which is a gift in and of itself. But one thing that really stands out to me as you talk about your journey is, your confidence in yourself and your trust in the process. And if there's one thing that I maybe see in a lot of other young people is they have an idea of where they want to go, but they're very anxious about making the right decisions and laying out that pathway for themselves. Where did that confidence come from for you to let things naturally fall into place? Or was that something that has developed over time for you?
I'd say that's developed over time because there have just been so many closed doors that made me keep knocking and figuring out, like even coming to Kentucky the first time. And if I had just realized, okay, I didn't get accepted to the Kesmark internship, you know, I guess I'm not good enough. Mm-hmm. Then I'll find something that seems like a lesser level, because that was my first real kind of high tier internship to me. And that's what people always talk about. Well, you get denied from jobs because you don't have the experience, but then how do you get the experience to get the job? And, you know, this kind of vicious cycle. And so just each time I've done that, then when I reach that new obstacle, which it just always seems like there's something new in front of me, where I, to myself, just start to feel intimidated. And I think, okay, is this something surmountable? And then I just recall, you know, past times where I thought, okay, I had no idea that this would kind of finally open up. And even getting to work the Keeneland sale, I had knocked on a few doors that way, couldn't find, you know, any options because I could only work part of the sale. And then a friend of a friend had worked for Denali, and she got me in. So a lot of it too, and I found this with my colleagues, is I think people are intimidated to ask others for help, and they feel like, mm-hmm. you know, that's putting a burden on someone. And I think most people actually really want to help. And especially if it's something that they've had to work their way up, and now they want to turn around and provide that for the next person coming behind them. And people really seem to appreciate passion and determination. And even coming to Kesmark, at first I felt a little bit embarrassed because I thought, oh my gosh, I've like emailed these people so many times, they probably find me annoying. And that wasn't the case at all. And now Kirsten Johnson is still a close mentor of mine. And so just not being afraid to ask, and when you don't get a response from emails, which happens a lot as well, realizing most of these people are very busy, and you have to be tactful and mindful of, you know, their time, but also like don't be afraid to send a follow-up email. And if that person doesn't get back to you, well, there's another professional out there. And so just always looking for that next avenue, because most of the time it's not going to fall into place perfectly. And even applying to vet school or undergrad or whatever it is, it doesn't make sense. Even watching friends around me, the schools that you get accepted into, and then the ones that seem like a lesser tier school that you're not accepted into. And okay, well, if I had applied the year before, the year after, would it be different? And probably the answer is yes. Like, just timing is everything, and there's so much that we can't control. But if we just keep at it and keep looking for opportunities, we're going to find something.
That's fantastic advice. I was writing all of, making notes during all of that, because that's what exactly, I mean, everything you've said has been incredible and insightful, but I want to make sure that we highlight that on social media. And to add to that, one of the things, you know, it's so true, because especially in the industry we're in, it's not like people are sitting on their computers for 8 hours a day, you know, checking emails. And so I think a lot of it can be like, a deterrent, or, oh, I didn't hear an email back. So they, you know, they must not be interested, when in reality, it's like, they probably didn't see it, or they saw it and just forgot about it. So it's yes, always a good strategy, I found, to reach out via email, you know, and then if you don't hear back, like you said, follow up, or when you will inevitably get a chance to meet that person, in passing, you say, oh yeah, I sent you an email once. I know you're so busy, but it, you know, they already have a little bit of your background and that you've tried to mm-hmm. make a connection. I think persistence is key, persistence in tactfulness, like you said. So being persistent in a very tactful way, because it's also, I think in the industry, it can be difficult sometimes too. And for those of us who have worked in it long enough, you know, we see plenty of people who are passionate about it, but they come through and they kind of fade out and realize it's not for them. And so you also, as a professional, and, you know, a potential like mentor, you have to protect your time. You want to make sure you're investing in the right people. And so determining who that is, you know, Anise has done such a great job of like, now screening incoming people through the program. But yeah, I think that's just like such a wealth of knowledge. And so again, as Anise said, so well said, Farron.
Thank you, Kim.
I think, and I'm glad you touched on that, Caitlin, because that's a really, really good point. And I myself used to feel very frustrated and still sometimes catch myself getting frustrated when I don't hear back from people over email. But now I realize every day when I open up my inbox and it's so flooded with emails, it might take me 4 days or a week to respond to people. And it's not because I'm not trying and working my butt off. It's just, mm-hmm. I'm so busy. And so I've found that even just somebody picking up the phone and giving me a call is so much easier. And that call is more meaningful and has more nuance and context to it, and takes less time sometimes than writing an email. And Farron, another thing that, oh, sorry, Caitlin.
Oh, no, I was agreeing. The other thing, just quickly though, that I can add is what's really helpful for me is when somebody says, oh, I'd love to set up a call with you, like a quick 15, 20 minute. And then they take the initiative, they put that on my calendar. That's also very helpful because, again, being, and I can't even imagine what a vet schedule is like, but at least, you know, I'm on the go and I'm using my calendar on my phone to like manage a lot of my life. But, you know, just having that there is like, okay, I know I have this coming up. I can like at least plan to be in a semi-quiet place or something for that 15, 20 minutes. Again, I can't even imagine having everything that you're doing on the move, like keeping that organized, but it is still helpful to at least have that like planned time.
Farron, how do you stay organized? I mean, I know that you have horses to breeze every morning. There are some days when you're at multiple tracks and training centers, mm-hmm. so you're spending a lot of time in your car. So how do you manage your time? And then how do you fill your drive time?
Right.
I love that question, Anise.
And as a jockey, our diet's important. So I'm always cooking my own food. I care about, you know, the sourcing. So I'm doing my grocery shopping and trying to meal prep ahead. But that's something that I've always done through college because I always cared about my fitness and nutrition as a track athlete. And then again, in vet school, since I was riding races at that point. So that's always been important because I know a lot of people feel like, well, I need to eat out or eat on the road. And so that's part of my, like, especially towards the early part of the week when I don't have races, I do a lot of my grocery shopping, meal prepping, and just make sure I have healthy meals to get me through my drives throughout the week and things that I can grab on the go, because I usually know my actual schedule about a day or two in advance. I'll know my race schedule a week in advance. But as far as which track or training center trainers want me to breeze, and they're usually an hour and a half apart from each other. So whether I'm in Lexington, Louisville, or Florence, Kentucky. And then when it's spring and summer, the surrounding tracks open and I can be riding there any day of the week. So Kentucky's usually Wednesday through Saturday or Sunday. And then Monday, Tuesday, sometimes Wednesday, Thursday, I can be in Indianapolis or Cincinnati, Ohio. So, you know, it's the three states, and but I love it because I want every opportunity to ride. And then between getting on horses in the morning, because I'm at the track every morning, so jockeys aren't paid for that work. Exercise riders are, but when you decide to become a jockey from an exercise rider, that's a step you're taking of less financial stability, because you're not getting that paycheck for getting on X number of horses every day. But you're doing that as your way to just build inroads with trainers and show them that you maybe get along with a certain horse. And a lot of it is just being patient and determined. And but if you show up every morning and show your face, it's kind of like we're talking about the phone call versus the email. And if you can go and see that professional in person, face to face, I always think that's the strongest thing you can do. So that's what I do every morning. And then I'm done at the racetrack, usually around 10 in the winter. Some of the track hours are later. Like today, I'm going to Breeze in the afternoon because I like to give more time for the dirt track to thaw out from cold weather. So in between that is when I fill in my vet work. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to get into acupuncture, because I feel it's something that I can fit into my schedule. It's not emergency medicine. Mm-hmm. And that's also why I like to go into surgery with Bob Hound, because I can see all these cases in a short amount of time, because it's just amazing how many cases come through Haggard, the variety of cases, and how quick these surgeons are, which is an important skill too, because less anesthesia time is always better for the animal as well. But of course, you have to be a very skilled surgeon to be able to go that fast at that high of a caseload and keep all your ducks in a row as a surgeon too. I mean, we're working on bones, and then we're working on intestines, and then, you know, we're delivering a dystocia, you know, a foal with a birth that's not going well. So things like that. But that's the great thing about Lexington, is it's just saturated with horses. So again, if you can put the time in the day, I always feel there aren't enough hours in the day for what I want to do, but I just use as much time as I can. Then I have a gym I go to in Lexington, and it's this ninja gym. So the person who started it, Brendan Kelly, he was on American Ninja Warrior, and he created this gym and developed all the obstacles that would be on the show so that he could practice them. So being there has been really inspiring, because the other athletes there are either amateur or professional boxers, and we're all young and we're all trying to build our careers. But a lot of it is opportunity, some politics are involved, and then of course just dedication and being good at what you do. So watching them train and watching us all come into the gym on our own hours, none of us have coaches, no one is keeping us accountable, so it's all up to us. And then just watching how they're building their brand, their image, trying to gain sponsors. So that's been really inspiring. So sometimes even when I'm physically exhausted and don't have a lot to give in the gym, just being around them and having a good conversation just picks me up as I go about my day. And then I bring my bike with me everywhere I go in my car. And so every racetrack where I go, I either know a running route or a cycling route. And so for me, just kind of having that pick me up throughout the day, as after you drive in the car for an hour and a half, you just feel a little bit like dull, and then you're going to go ride a racehorse. And so all these things just keep me, I don't know, keep my mind active, keep my body feeling good. So again, eating right, exercising, doing something I love, that all keeps me going. And so I'm not even one that really follows my calendar that closely. I kind of keep it, but most of the time it's all in my head, and but I've always been that way, where I've done better with more. So in undergrad, being on the track team, and then being in a pretty intensive course load, being pre-vet, and then I brought my horse to college, all of that seemed like it was too much. But I find when time slows down for me, I'm just a little bit more antsy, or I don't feel as efficient when I wake up and I have a whole day with not a lot to do. So to me, to know that, okay, I got only this much time to work out, then I'm going to go really hard on my workout. I have only, you know, this much time at these barns, that I'm really going to make sure those conversations with trainers are meaningful.
And I seem to remember you mentioned that you listen to a lot of audiobooks when you're driving. Is that right?
Yes, that's usually my favorite. I like biographies in general, and just more so people, often athletes, but even just a whole variety of people and anyone who's gone, had to overcome something. I find that the most inspiring. There are some athlete biographies I see and I'm like, well, I know that they were just a really gifted individual and, you know, that must be nice, but I'd rather hear someone who really, whether it was their upbringing that they had to overcome or, you know, they just weren't as, you know, physically adept as some of the others, or, you know, sometimes it's race, sometimes it's gender. So for me, being in a male dominated sport, that's always really inspiring to me to just think, wow, how did this person do it in this, you know, time in history, or, you know, where they were, or when they seem to get close to the Olympics and then war breaks out. You know, I think of Unbroken and things like that, where life just often isn't fair. And if we get frustrated and look at, you know, why we're not getting opportunities, well, then, you know, if you take that victim approach, you're just going to kind of go down that rabbit hole. And I think the power of the mind is so important. So always keeping that kind of champion mindset, no matter what your circumstances are, which it's often for a jockey going to be up and down. And I've been around a lot of top jockeys and gotten to hear about their careers. And it is amazing. Like, there's never really a point where you would think, okay, that person, once they did that, it's smooth sailing. And it never is. So, you know, maybe for a short time, but there's always something around the corner that's, you know, you're going to get taken off your top horse and it's not going to make sense. But the most important thing is the mental resilience, and that we go around not carrying bitterness, because that's just going to bring us down. And I think it's important too. One of my favorite things that attracted me to horse racing is the people that make up the racetrack, and people who come from these rags to riches stories, and how being, you know, around a great horse can really change their life, and the grooms, and watching the way that they really live with these horses, and they send their money back home to support their family, and just seeing that opportunity. So for me, some days, even if, you know, I don't get to go talk to the trainers I want to for my own career sake, just being able to spend that time and thinking, if I can have a positive attitude and like say the right thing to this groom who, you know, is working hard, maybe their horse is going through an injury, and, you know, we're all affected by different things and we get so caught up in our own world. And so just to appreciate the people there who are usually not getting to be in the limelight, like, how often do you know the groom of a top horse and yet they spend the most time with that horse? So those relationships are just, that's something that I really appreciate at the racetrack. And that's something that I think is our duty in any job that we have, to remember people who have those jobs that we might neglect to notice, but realize, like, without them, what do we have?
Amen. That's very well spoken, Farron. And probably, you know, one of the number one things for people to remember as they're growing in their careers, you know, treat everyone the same. Mm-hmm. Treat everyone as you would like to be treated. And, you know, I can think of a number of stories of famous athletes or celebrities that have reached this, you know, high level of respect in society, but, you know, maybe there's a story of how they mistreated someone or misspoke to someone, or, you know, treated the valet at a restaurant, or misspoke to someone who they thought was beneath them in some way. And so, you know, your character follows you your entire life. And so if you can maintain that character and stay true to yourself, that's just as important as any accomplishment you can probably reach.
Right. And to add to that, you know, you mentioned, Farron, the power of the mind, and, you know, staying positive essentially and keeping a champion mindset. And I think that's something I personally, like, I struggle with. You know, I think, Anise, sometimes you hear these stories of, okay, maybe people not being like very, or, you know, gratuitous in their life or whatever. And it's like, well, what were they struggling with? But at the same time, you know, being a professional is keeping that composure, right? And, you know, especially for someone in your position, Farron, you know, a jockey and a vet, if you're having a really tough time with your riding, you can't let that affect the way you're approaching your vet work, because, you know, you have the horse's health in your hands. Mm-hmm. You know, and same thing with trainers, and even in my, you know, competitive amateur riding career, I find that that mental like resiliency, it has to be, just because things aren't going right for you at that moment, or maybe it's been like a really tough time, it doesn't mean that you can let that affect the way you're reacting to situations around you, treating other people, or God forbid, you know, the horses, because obviously the horses are at the center of all of this, and they are such sensitive creatures. They pick up on everything. Yeah. They, you know your mood better than you do. And it's just something that I think, yeah, is so important. Maybe something that's a little overlooked is how we have to, if we are truly keeping the animal, you know, and the people at the center of everything we do, then we have to set that standard of having a positive mindset.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Great point.
Farron, another, on that same tone that Caitlin just touched on of, you know, how our behavior and attitude can affect the horses, something that you've touched on quite a bit in your social media, you've done a great job of highlighting your personal fitness and your love for sports. You mentioned that you were a pole vaulter in college. You continue to work out at this awesome ninja gym. How do you feel like your physical fitness and composure in that sense transfers to your riding ability?
Right. I think part of it is confidence. And so coming into every race, knowing that you're as physically fit, you're as healthy as you can be, you know, being on top of the things that you can control as an athlete is so important, because there are plenty of environmental factors we can't control. Maybe the race comes off the turf and the horse might not like dirt, or all the things that you could get cut off in the race or stumble out of the gate. But if I can go into every single race and give my best effort to my connections, my owners, my trainers, and my horse, and again, just having the respect of the time that everyone has put into this horse, and I only get, you know, 5 minutes to warm the horse up and about 2 minutes in the race. And so that I need to take that really responsibly and just bring out the best in the horse that I can provide. So part of my training is the thought of, I do a lot of balance and core work, and a lot of the training exercises I've learned from pole vaulting, because we do a lot of gymnastic type of training, because it is a gymnastic maneuver and you're defying gravity on the pole. So I think about needing to defy gravity on the racehorse, because weights is such a big thing with handicaps and having apprentice weights and such. And I think, well, if I can use my body and my muscles in a way to carry myself for the horse. So I do a lot of training where I'm holding up my own legs on bars and just developing the muscle awareness and the actual strength to do that. And just thinking, okay, I'm taking all this weight off the horse around the track. And then in the last final furlongs of the race, when you're most tired and the horse is most tired, well, that's when they need your help the most. And that's when you need to be able to help pick them up with the reins and carry them a bit. And if you're starting to get off balance and make them carry you more, then, you know, you might lose a photo or get second. And so just realizing it's easy to blame the horse and just say, oh, well, they weren't good enough, or this happened in the race that cost me. But to always try to look at yourself first. So every time I get a second, a close third, something like that, where it was, okay, I was that close to winning, what could I have done better? And how could I have helped that horse in its final strides? So I do a lot of cardio as well. And I'll do a cardio workout and then strength or balance right after. And I'd learned this from Muhammad Ali's biography, actually. He would talk about how he would do all these sparring sessions and then spar someone who's at his own level. Because he says, when you're in these final rounds in the ring, you're most tired, that's when it counts the most. And that was the same concept with pole vaulting. Every time you clear the bar, they raise it 6 inches. And when you're trying to win the meet and it's at the highest, or you're trying to break a record, you're at your most tired. And so to be able to be mentally have that stamina and physically have the endurance to perform your best when you're actually your most tired. So same thing with a horse race. So I'll go and do a hard cardio session and then try to do strength balance work, because of course we know as we start to get shaky, we start to lose our balance. And it's not something you can see from the crowd, but it's something that you can be aware of yourself and just know, okay, I was allowing the horse's mouth and the bit to carry me instead of me carrying myself in those last few strides. And maybe I could have gotten just a little bit more out of my horse. Mm-hmm. So that's the reason that I take my fitness so seriously.
Wow. I have chills. As a rider, it's, you know, obviously not at that level, but just thinking about everything that we do to make sure, and what the horses allow us to do, right? Like, right. These animals are so amazing. They're so forgiving, and they so often make up for our shortcomings. And, right. And then, as you pointed out, they might get blamed for it. Mm-hmm. And it's just so beautiful what you said.
Well, I'm glad you understand that from being a rider. And that's what I say in any discipline, it's horses are horses. And like you were talking about earlier, our attitude and our mood. And when I'm on a horse, I always have to be thinking, this horse can win this race. Mm-hmm. And I know that's so powerful. And my mentors have taught me that. And Pat Day was telling me that one day where he'd won all these races back to back. In his last race of that day, the trainer said something derogatory about the horse's chances. And he said, I could just feel like the wind come out of my sails. And he goes, I really think I would have won that race. But, mm-hmm. You know, the horse didn't feel my confidence. It wasn't the same as this level of confidence I'd had in my earlier races. And we didn't win the race. And no one blamed me for it because I wasn't expected to win. But again, if you're always holding yourself to that highest standard, and even the things that people can't see, you can see. So kind of like the preparation. I know how I've prepared. And so I'm going to put my best foot forward every time.
Wow. Let's mic drop quote for the episode. We always, in our show graphics on social media, we pick out a quote, and that one stands out so much. It's a great way of summing up our relationship with the horses, our relationship to ourselves, that connection to your personal character, mm-hmm. Farron, which you embody so well. And that's something that just, I think people pick up on you very quickly, is your self-confidence and how you treat others and your, sense of, there's a word that I'm looking for, like just your sense of self and how your presence in the world does affect people and does affect the horses. And I have a tremendous amount of respect for that. So thank you so much for joining us today. Yeah. I hope we can have a part two and talk absolutely. More about all the other things that you do in the world.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Farron. This was truly an honor. And to second Anise, we have to have you back on. I know you've got to get back to the track.
All right.
We've got to have you back.
I always love this with you guys, and I love what Amplify stands for.
Thank you so much. We are calling this part one. I'm just going to say now there's going to be a part two episode to this. So we're just going to schedule that as soon as we can.
Right. We'll do it.
Thank you so much, Farron. Thank you, Caitlin, for another great episode. And I'll see you guys for part two.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
All right.